What's easier, to go outside and exercise first thing in the morning or to sit down with your laptop and drink a cup of coffee?
Well, here's the thing. It's the definition of insanity to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result.
This is Take Two.
How did you actually get into it?
Okay, so I qualified as a health scientist about 15 years ago. So health science was my passion. Like, I was just really interested in how different things worked. I was always questioning, like, why? Well, why is that good for you? What's happening?
Okay.
So I got into a broad course, health science and physiology, so how things work in the body. And I qualified. I went traveling. And then I came back. And then I set up a nutritional consultancy business because I was really into food at the time. And everyone, nutrition was on the up. So I got to work with fairly elite level athletes. And I became obsessed with recovery then, because like the athlete would finish and then they would rest, eat, sleep, and then they were ready for performance. So I became obsessed with, okay, what has the biggest impact on recovery? And to my surprise, the answer came back as sleep.
What were they saying that was really good for recovery before that?
I mean, people, there was a lot of science around strength and conditioning. And that was kind of, you know, like that was fairly well established and formulated around how to train.
Yeah.
Then nutrition started coming up and say, look, it's being in the kitchen and food prep and what you're putting into your body, the fuel. So that's super important. Okay. So you need to get that right. So it was kind of in some ways limited to that, or the understanding of sleep and its role. It wasn't really known, or it was just sort of, yeah, well, sleep well. Or
yeah. It was kind of like get your eight hours,
or there wasn't such an understanding or emphasis on it from a sports performance point of view. Mm. Certainly in Ireland, I would say.
Okay.
In the US. So what happened to me in my journey was, upon this discovery, I contacted a company in the US who had wearable tech like this, which analyzed sleep and gave the user a number for mental fatigue. And this technology had been designed by US military for their fighter jet pilots. Okay. Because we know that if you're mentally fatigued, your reaction times are going to be down. Mm. Okay. There's no getting around it. You cannot outperform that mental fatigue and get a better reaction time. So they were losing fighter pilots and jets. They didn't care about the jets, but it took 10 years to train a pilot. So these pilots had this wearable tech. At the time, they were about €1,000 each. So I convinced them to send me over 5.
Stop.
Yeah, free of charge. So I said,
I need to learn how to
I talk for a living, so maybe that's it, right?
Oh my God. Fuck sleep. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So it's all about leverage.
Really?
It's all about perception.
What do you mean by leverage and perception, though? I had someone talk about I manipulate people in a good way.
No, I don't. I mean, like, I was working with some fairly high-level athletes.
I see.
At the time.
Okay.
You know, and I said, look, I'm working with these athletes. And then when I did get working with IRUPA, Irish Rugby, and I got working with some of those guys, and I had... From that, I thought, I want to get Conor McGregor, right? Because he was on a massive trajectory. I thought, I'm going to get him. So I thought, I'll talk to John Cavan and see if they're interested in having sleep in. And I contacted John with a, you know, big long email or whatever. And John came back, like really nice guy, came back straight away and said, yeah, come in. And I'd done a talk in SBG for the fighters.
And was Conor there?
No, Conor wasn't there. And so, you know, I kept in touch with John, brilliant guy. And, you know, from that then, about a year after, I suppose, I can't remember the timelines, but like, the big fight with Mayweather was coming up. And I contacted John again because I had the tech then.
Okay.
So I said to the tech company, dealing with pro rugby players, because they use the tech for American football players. Mm. So the Seattle Seahawks used it the year after they won the Super Bowl. The Chicago Cubs in baseball used it the year after they won the World Series of Baseball for the first time in 103 years. Yeah. So over in the US, it was being taken really seriously, right? It was a really good measurement. So I sort of said, look, will Conor be interested in whatever? So I met with Conor's performance doctor, coach, head of performance, Julian Dalby, showed him the tech. He liked it. He said, talk to Conor. Conor liked the idea. He said, yeah, let's do it. So I couldn't believe it, kind of thing. You know, I was like brought in, brought into that camp, you know, with about, you know, it was about 25 people. Connor has his team built around him for years and whatever. So I got introduced in there and then I met Connor.
What was it like working with him?
It was a crazy experience for me because, you know, the first time meeting him was the day after he signed the contract, and he actually cut his eye. And, you know, that was my first meeting. Him upstairs going, look at my eye. And I was like, sleep is when tissue repair happens, you know, like straight away. So, you know, I then.
There, Connor, and he just closed his eye and put him down on the ground.
Yeah, he actually did. The doctor put him down the ground, said, he got the glue, and he glued the cut. So the, my first meeting was standing there. Connor was all tense and agitated because, you know, he just cut his eye and whatever. And then I'm just looking at Connor bare chest on the ground and this guy gluing his eye closed. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Yeah. Welcome to MMA.
I 2 weeks later, I was at the first training session, and then I was at the other training sessions with Connor and whatever. And that was incredible to see that, to be involved in that in any way at all. Connor was with me, you know, very nice, very polite, very, you know, he trained very hard. He was relaxed, but he was disciplined and everything. So like, you know, the Connor that trains and all that is a different Connor to the media Connor and all that. So I've seen all that as well. I've seen the huge kind of contrast. So, but you know, I had been working with, you know, people like Jamie Heaslip as well, who were fairly high level. So, so that was, you know, that certainly helped in my trajectory. And I do a lot of work in the corporate space over the last number of years. All the pharmaceuticals have me in to speak. I've run sleep programs in eBay and PayPal and stuff like that, and a lot of big kind of multinationals. And I still do work with athletes and stuff like that. And then people come to me for help. People come to me, they're like, you know, I've got a sleep problem, and, you know, they're struggling. And I've seen over 10 years, like, the type of things that impact and the type of issues that people are having. Mm-hmm. And it's really great that you're going to talk about health and stress and all of this stuff.
Yeah. So let me pull up something really important, right? Just so that I show you the fucking crack that I'm on right now. So last night I slept for 8 hours and 56 minutes.
Well done you. That's great.
Thank you. It's going to get worse from here. So I had 1 hour and 16 minutes of deep.
Mm-hmm.
1 hour 7 of REM.
Mm-hmm.
6 hours and 33 minutes of light sleep.
Okay.
23 minutes awake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the crack? What's wrong with
what's
me,
the crack? So like, this is nearly
a shit show.
No, the first mistake that people make.
Okay. Is it right, fucking
because garden? Because listen, I've got a secret for you.
Tell
me. I had an epiphany this year, right?
Tell me.
Okay, so
I'm so excited.
I'm not a sleep coach. I've discovered this. I'm not. I've been in the area 10 years, right? I'm not a sleep coach, right?
So what?
Because if 98% of people that come to me with sleep issues don't have sleep issues, think about a coach, tennis coach, a rugby coach, or whatever coach they're coaching.
Mm.
I don't go to the bedroom at night while you're sleeping and go, that's it, you're doing great, keep it up. I don't analyze your sleep cycles, your REM and twitch buttons or make you go into that. No. I look at every single thing that impacts your sleep.
So before the sleep.
Yes.
Not the during.
Yes, it's not like I can talk about all of the levers that impact sleep. When someone comes to me with a sleep issue, I look at everything they're doing from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to bed. And that's not, you know, outside of a nap, that's not sleeping.
Mm.
So every single thing you do, every decision you make will inform your ability to sleep. Okay. So I've background in, you know, nutrition because I had a nutrition consultancy business, health science, I understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So I've become adept at understanding the mechanisms that influence from nutrition, your bodily functions, the signals you're giving it, from light exposure, exercise. So I have a great knowledge of exercise. The system that communicates between the body and the brain, the nervous system, and the signals, the hormones, all of that, how that works, keeping that in balance. Mindset. Most of the people that speak to me have serious issues with either racing mind, stress, or anxiety, or some combination of that.
Okay.
Okay. So all of these things
will
influence your sleep. And so what I do is I go through their day and their patterns of behaviors and their mindset and their choices, and I tweak things and I move things. And once they do everything within that, then
you can talk.
The sleep happens because there's rarely something wrong with the sleep unless they have a diagnosed medical sleep condition like sleep apnea or another issue where they're having maybe night terrors where, you know, dreams are leaking into other phases of sleep or stuff like that. And your brain will regulate how deep and how far or how long you spend in light sleep or deep sleep.
Okay.
And we get obsessed with this, but actually the answers are in everything else that we do.
Mm. I'm assuming that obviously this is based on an individual, like it's on an individual basis.
Yes.
But you did say something about tweaking certain things. Based on your experience, what is the one thing that you've had, that you've seen create the biggest difference in a positive way, that when people change that, it helped their sleep?
That's a tough one. I would say it's a complex thing, but getting control of their mind.
How do you do that?
So stress is one issue and a racing mind is another issue. They're not necessarily together, because I work with people who are maybe very busy and they enjoy their job and they can't switch off at night and their mind keeps going.
So is that racing mind,
for instance? In Western culture, we have with the untrained mind, right? And people say, my mind keeps racing. I don't know what to do. I just can't. I just go to bed and my mind keeps racing, right? So the area of the brain that looks after problem solving, planning, short-term memory, is the prefrontal cortex. So that gathers information and starts to solve problems. And it's the same area of your brain that's actually in charge of worry as well. We need to ramp down activity in that area. Otherwise, you won't sleep. Now think about, I call it cognitive chewing gum. So if you're sitting down watching TV, you're relaxed, you're chilled out, your brain is engaged in something, and then sleep comes on you and you start feeling tired. And then you go, oh, I better go to bed. And you go upstairs, you go into bed, and then you're like, I'm wide awake. What happened? Yeah. What happened? And you start, your mind will start looking at what I have to do tomorrow or what she said to me earlier today, or right? So we have to calm the mind and allow sleep to happen. It's all about calming the nervous system and calming the mind and moving obstacles out of the way and allowing the sleep to happen. So the way we retrain the mind is by doing conscious relaxation exercises, and people don't mistake comfort or distraction for relaxation.
What's an example of a conscious relaxation exercise?
A body scan. So the US military, again, they've pumped millions into this. They come up with a body scan that they train all their new recruits in, and they report a 98% success rate after 6 weeks, not after one go. And here's the thing about your racing mind is that you would never go to the gym once and say, well, that didn't work. Or you would never eat a meal and go, well, I can't see any difference. But yet people go, well, I tried that, or I just can't meditate. You know, my mind is just, well, you're just drawing back the curtain and seeing actually what's going on. So you need to settle your mind down and talk to your mind and say, right, now it's my time. We have to settle down, and you give it a task to do. And the old thing of counting sheep, right? That's the idea of cognitive chewing gum. It could be reading. It could be listening to a podcast. It could be counting your breaths. But cognitive relaxation is so important, because people are arriving to bed wired and tired, right? Trying to squeeze everything into the day. Arriving in bed going, what day is today? Do I take out the bins? What do I, you know? And then they go, I can't sleep. And then they start scrolling.
Yeah, the doom scroll.
And that's stimulating your nervous system. It's producing chemicals like dopamine that people are addicted. You know, it's dopamine. The dopamine pathway is the only reward pathway in our, you know, evolution to keep us alive. It's the neuromodulator of seeking, of getting what we don't have. We get excited. We want things like holidays and monies and food and sex and drugs and rock and roll. You know, that excites us and drives us forward. That's dopamine. Your phone operates off a dopaminergic system. So people cannot relax their mind, and they reach for the phone to distract their mind, but they're actually stimulating and stimulating and stimulating.
Yeah, I completely believe that, because like I'm shooting myself in the foot here, but the first thing I do, and I do it consciously, I know it's a bad choice, but for now that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Where when I wake up, I go on my phone for 10 minutes to wait, for that mm-hmm. dopamine to hit so that then I roll out of bed
yeah.
and actually start my day. Versus if, let's say I have a 7 a.m. alarm, if I don't go on my phone, I'm snoozing. Like I'm still asleep. Like I'm not like, I need that kick up the arse to actually get out of bed, which is why I'm using my phone. But then I feel like you're kind of going there, but I'm sure you might agree where sometimes we might overcomplicate things, you know, like with, although routines are super important, morning routines are super important. There's so many fucking routines that we can like bring into our lives that then it's someone just goes, no, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to do a body scan. I'm not going to go out and get my morning sun. 2 hours, I'm not going to look at the screen. Like there's so much stuff that is being fed to us on how we're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So then people are just going to carry on doing it wrong.
Yeah. So here's my issue with that.
Tell me.
That people come to me and that sleep is a barometer to see how well you're dealing with life. The first three questions that any doctor or medical professional will ask you is, tell me about your sleep. So sleep is like a thermostat. It's like being in a sauna, right, and cooling the thermostat and saying, oh, look, it's colder now. So people want to fix their sleep, but they don't want to change their life. They don't want to do any of that stuff.
100%.
But the way to fix your sleep is through these little habits. And they are little. They are small things. So one of the other things, that one of the other levers, very powerful levers, and you said it there, is light viewing. So as has been put out to us again and again and again in the media, avoid white and blue light late in the day. The complement to that is get lots of white and blue light early in the day, or get light exposure as early as you can, because that will do several things mechanistically to the brain. Okay. When you wake up and you feel groggy, that's adenosine in your system. Adenosine is sleep, what we call sleep pressure. So the longer you're awake, adenosine builds up in your system. And if I keep you awake for 48 hours, wow, you'll have tons of adenosine. That's going to push you to sleep. That's one of the things that pushes you to sleep. The other is melatonin, right? So when you wake up in the morning, you still have this grogginess chemical in your system called adenosine. What do people do to get rid of that? Coffee, caffeine. And the caffeine molecule is the same shape as the adenosine molecule. So it blocks the adenosine receptor in the brain. So you get, it clears away the grogginess. And then at 2 o'clock, the molecule of caffeine leaves and all the adenosine floods in and you get a crash around 2 o'clock. The fastest way to clear adenosine is light. That's the fastest way with no side effect. Also, you have receptors in the back of your retina, which are specifically there for morning light frequency, photoganglion receptors in the back of your eye, and they recognize morning light, and that anchors your sleep pattern and it sets a timer for melatonin release 14 hours later. Okay, so getting morning light, and also your cortisol awakening response. Okay, so cortisol, the stress hormone. So we're better designed. Our whole physiology is set up to get stuff done, right? As cavemen and women, your job, we're diurnal, we're active during daylight hours. Our job, hunt, gather, procreate, build shelter, learn. Your whole physiology is set up in the morning to do that. That's why everyone has peak cortisol in the morning between 9 and 12 to get shit done, right? Now, the way to amplify, if you send a weak signal, you get a weak response. Morning light and even exercise in the morning. Morning light will increase your cortisol activation by 50% and exercise will increase it by a further 50 to 75%. So instead of dragging yourself out of bed, hitting the snooze button and leaving the curtains closed and pouring coffee into yourself, get up, get outside for 5 or 10 minutes. That's all it is, 5 or 10 minutes. And the receptors will speak to the suprachiasmatic nucleus in the brain, which is the timing mechanism for sleep-wake cycles, and that informs every other system in your body of what time it is and what to do. So I give people like tips and whatever else, but there's a whole ton of mechanism and science behind them from really amazing people like Andrew Huberman and Matthew Walker and other people who have spent, you know, decades researching this kind of stuff. But the morning light is crucial. We're a signaling system. And we've just messed up the signaling. We're not using our body as we should. The other thing that increases adenosine is a byproduct of energy use. So if we're more physically active in the day, our adenosine levels will go up. It will be easier to fall asleep at night, right? So I kind of joke with people. I say, right, I'll fix your sleep, right? Come up to my house. We go outside. We dig the garden all day. You only come in for food at lunch. And when the sun goes down, you can come in then. Yeah. Having worked all day and you can have a hot shower. Again, temperature will cause a rebound cooling effect, which will increase melatonin, right? And you'll have no issue. You'll have a big meal, foods that contain tryptophan that will again help the process, and you will fall asleep at night. We know those days where we've been like super active, maybe go out surfing or go out whatever, you know, spend all day outside.
Yeah, like I remember my days when I was living back home and it's a very sunny country. It's the summertime. You're up, the light is beaming through the blinds as well. Yeah. And you're dead tired. Like you're dead tired by probably even 2 p.m. sometimes just because of the heat, the light.
Yeah.
The food that we eat is obviously a Mediterranean diet as well. So high in veg, high in oils. Obviously, we do love our carbs though, in fairness.
Yeah.
But it's more... Anyways, but what I'm going with this is that then, my sleep is fucking sexy when I'm home.
It's really
nice.
It is. It's been shown that it will reduce sleep latency, how long it takes you to get to sleep. You will go deeper.
In
the deepest part of it, you will wake up a different person. And the other thing the light does is it increases your serotonin levels.
Yes, I am happier as well.
You're more content. Like dopamine is what we don't have and what we want. Serotonin is being happy in the present moment.
Yes.
Serotonin is a precursor to melatonin.
Wow.
So you require ample amounts of serotonin in order to successfully make enough melatonin.
Are there any habits that would increase that serotonin? I don't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. We need to get like positive... We need to start to include positive habits in our day for both dopamine and serotonin. So serotonin is about being present, is about, you know, playing with your child, is about doing things that bring you into the present, like breath work, yoga, massage. All of those things will increase your serotonin. Natural sunlight increase your serotonin.
Wow.
So, and the same with dopamine, because the issue today is cheap dopamine.
Yes.
And where's cheap dopamine? Processed food. Phone. Mm-hmm. Number one source of cheap dopamine is the phone. And people are trying to figure out, it's so addictive, can't get off. Yeah, that's because it's the most powerful reward pathway in human evolution ever. And you're trying to, like, you know, get off the phone. That's kind of why. So it's about, my father once said to me, I'm not worried about the problem you have. I'm worried about the solution you're going to apply.
Okay, why is that?
Why is that? Because, I mean, you know, if I have a sleep issue, maybe I drink a bottle of whiskey and I fall asleep. Well, that's a big problem, right? I'm not worried about the problem. I'm worried about the solution. So what solutions are people applying when they can't sleep? They're going on their phones.
Yeah.
They're taking maybe, you know, tablets or whatever else. Like another example, we can talk about the nervous system and stress, right? Because the same systems that control sleep control stress. It's the same system.
Why did our bodies fuck ourselves up like that? Like, it's so interesting though, because what you're saying is you're bringing in so much data to something that is so simple that has been constantly repeated to us. But again, it goes back to people just get overwhelmed with all these things and they just go back to the stuff. Because what's easier, to go outside and exercise first thing in the morning or to sit down with your laptop and drink a cup of coffee?
Well, here's the thing. It's the definition of insanity to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. What we cannot do is, like, I kind of divide it into three areas, right, for me. The body, as in, what is it designed to do? The functionality of our body is not designed to sit at a computer and do this all day and in a sitting. We are designed to use our body. And if we use our body in the manner in which it should, and we're sending the right food into it, if we're sending the right signals into it, fantastic. The communication network and the effectors, so the nervous system and the hormones, that's what communicates between the body and the mind, right? That's the neural network, the two-way communicate. That's how we perceive the world. If we didn't have, sight, sound, touch, smell, taste, your nervous system, right? So we have the body, we have the nervous system, and we have the mind. The mind is powerful because it can override everything. And perceptions and ideas. And your mind will fight and defend its current behaviors to your detriment. That's the first barrier. Your mind will say, no, no, don't do that. Because don't forget that the body and the mind is designed to bring you back to comfort. Homeostasis. That's called homeostasis. And we have a particular area in our brain, the hypothalamus, and its sole function is to adapt to whatever environment you put it through. Mm-hmm. And it will always bring you back to homeostasis. So if I bring you outside homeostasis, exercise, heart rate goes up, blood pressure goes up, your body will bring you back down to normal state of functioning. So it's within our kind of nature to, once we experience pain or suffering or difficulty, I don't like that. Yeah. But people mistake comfort for relaxation. Oh. Yeah. So what we need to do is sort of educate people. But I like to do all the science and then condense it down into, okay, here's exactly what to do. Here is the least amount of effort and time commitment to get the most result, right? So your morning light viewing, 5 to 10 minutes, grab your cup of tea or whatever, delay your first coffee. If you delay your first coffee by 60 to 90 minutes, it will overarch because it takes 5 to 8 hours for it to be 50% of it to be metabolized. But if you delay your first coffee, it will help you with the afternoon slump. What will happen is if you do all of the recommendations around lifestyle that I talk about, is you will get back the currency of time, energy, and presence. You will become more efficient. You will be a nicer person to be around. You know, all of that feeds into better sleep. And when you get better sleep, it impacts your mood. It impacts the food choices you make. It impacts your ability to recover, to heal, your cognitive function, your mental alertness. We have to relearn how to live, because what we've done in the last couple of hundred years and what we've done in the last 20 years with the internet and with technology is one big, huge social experiment. And we're at the mercy of app companies and organizations, whatever else, you know. So we have to look at that again. And say, like, is this serving me? You know, so it is your choice. But the health outcomes can be massively transformed with some small effort. And the initial effort of building the habit, that takes up the most real estate in your brain. That at the beginning, you'll encounter the most friction.
Yeah, that's true.
But it becomes a habit and you get the reward is huge.
It's there.
Mm.
So starting your day, you've got your sunlight, delay your cup of coffee, and ideally maybe go out on a walk, exercise, yeah, whatever. Considering that we're based in Ireland, I know that Andrew Huberman suggested lights like that sometimes, like in dark places, like sunlight bulbs. What are they called?
Light boxes. Similar to these lights.
Okay, very similar.
Yeah, similar. You don't even have to look in. I mean, you can just plug it in. It's there, boom.
Mm.
Now I've worked with people who...
Have you been doing that? Like winter time and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I have one. Clients I work with, they get one. They're cheap enough, they're inexpensive. And they said, wow. What's the most powerful physical lever to influence your circadian rhythm? So what is circadian rhythm? It is the internal mechanism which controls every single function and process in your body. Mm. Every creature, animal, plant, insect has a circadian rhythm. So what we have to do is we have to start living and working in tune with that. And if we do that, we will live longer and be healthier. So the most powerful outside influence, we have the internal mechanism that goes, right? There's outside influence, light, temperature, social connection, food, all of that help align our circadian rhythm. The most powerful lever by far is light.
Wow.
Yeah, the most powerful Zeitgeber, time giver from outside that will influence is light. If people have jet lagged, the quickest way to adapt is light exposure at the correct times.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So, and it is actually that simple where you just walk up to your light stand, turn it on.
Yeah.
And
you can just sit there and eat your breakfast and whatever, and you're getting that
get
light. You're getting the activation, the super the timer, the biological clock is going, okay, it's morning. Right, let's do this. Let's do that. The cortisol activation is responding. And so that's like the first part. And that's an easy enough task, right? So then you start into your day.
Yeah, that's right. What I was going on with the nervous system and stress maybe.
So let's look at the nervous system and stress and everything else. But let's look at when we sleep in 90-minute cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's called an ultradian cycle. These continue in the day in the brain without us really knowing it. There's a famous researcher, Anders Ericsson, and he found through his work, who's a psychologist, that elite level athletes, musicians at the very top of their trade, chess grandmasters, mathematicians, all of these people worked in bouts of 90 minutes. 90 minutes of intense focus concentration, and then they had a 15-minute break. Right? They didn't know anything about all trading cycles. Yeah. That is the most productive and efficient way to work. If you give yourself that 15-minute break where you're not using the prefrontal cortex and stimulating the nervous system and you're just calming down, doing a task. It could be a mundane task of getting a cup of tea or coffee. It could be clearing your desk. It could be something where you're not using that. You will prevent burnout. You will be more efficient. You will be sharper. You will be more focused. It's energy management, neural energy management and bodily energy management. There's no system or animal or plant in the world that works just constantly hitting it for hours and hours and hours and hours. So that's how you organize your day. Your first task should be the thing that you really have to get done, the one that you're dreading.
Eat the frog,
move the big rocks, right? Lean into the day. Get that one done. What will that do? That will give you a huge burst of dopamine. Yes, I got it done. Right, bring it on. I'm ready for the next one. Okay, rather than pushing it out. So how we work, those little mini breaks. Huberman refers to them as NSD or non-sleep deep rest protocols where you're disconnecting and you're... So I mentioned the nervous system. So it's one kind of, you know, pathway. And we're constantly kind of pushing up on that sort of continuum with our phone, with work, with conversations, with everything. It's like we don't realize how high up we are on that spectrum. And then we go to bed and we're like way up here. We don't even realize. So
yeah.
During the day, if you're kind of ramping down an activity and going up and ramping down and going up, you know, you're building in that. So that's a really good way to work. So, you know, we should be looking at our day in terms of 2 8-hour stints. Okay. Building in the 15-minute breaks, building in your lunch break, taking rest, and then in the evening time, start thinking about, you know, letting go and coming down. And that's difficult. Like I say that sleep is the ultimate act of letting go when you think about it. Letting go of your hopes, letting go of your dreams, letting go about what you didn't get done, what you have to do tomorrow. It's letting go.
Yeah, it's kind of acceptance.
Eh? It's like, acceptance that
I'm done.
I'm done. Enough. Now let's recover and go again. Right.
Yeah.
But people are dragging that stuff into bed with them, into their head. You know, so how we organize our day, getting light exposure, getting as much light as possible during the day, working in 90-minute bouts, exercise, you know, 5 p.m. is a good time to finish work and exercise. The reason it is because your cardiovascular system and your muscular system and your core body temperature is at its peak at 5 p.m. It's a good time to exercise, right?
What would actually be better though? Is it the morning or is it 5
p.m.? I mean, in my view, it's like it's great to exercise anytime as long as it's not
exactly
just before bed, but like there are better times. So
I recently found that out.
Yeah. Upon your hormone levels will be higher in the morning.
Mm.
So, like, but your cardiovascular system won't be working exceptionally well or at its peak. So, morning is a good time. What that does is helps drive up your body temperature.
Mm.
That's fantastic. Lunchtime is a good time. And about 12 hours after you wake is a good time. Usually that's about 5 p.m. You need to leave time because if you're exercising, you're in stress response to some degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that is a good time to exercise. And then it's about ramping everything down. It's about chilling out. It's about getting food. It's about, you know, all those type of things.
No,
those would really help.
Yeah, it's interesting with the thing about exercise because obviously growing up and practicing sport and all that,
yeah,
I was having 7 p.m. sessions or something and sleeping, but I'm waking up exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
But this would have been before all these podcasts were a thing and these books and whatnot.
Yeah.
But even now, if I were to go on a 7 p.m. run,
yeah,
although I feel like I slept like a baby, I'm exhausted the next day.
Yeah.
And I couldn't explain it mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming it's because I'm not winding down. I'm running, I'm showering, I'm in bed.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you know, depending on the exercise intensity and duration, yeah, your cortisol levels are going to be up. So when we are activating our body and our nervous system, we're producing chemicals that take time to be eliminated and they do stimulate us and wake us up. So that's definitely what could be happening. Cortisol will wake you up. And you can fall asleep exhausted and you will be awoken. You will be woken up because at some level, subconscious or conscious or whatever, there's a threat there. Cortisol levels are high. That signals to the brain, ooh, something going on, there's a threat. Mm. So you need to ramp. So like what do pro athletes do? They have a shower, which is good, right? So you're doing something right, right?
Okay. I'll try my best to shower, you know.
Eat. Eat foods with carbohydrates. Mm. So how we organize our food. Proteins earlier in the day, more carbohydrates later in the day.
Okay.
Know that people are freaking out, like carbs are the devil. carbs turn into fat at night. No, it's your overall calorific intake.
If I don't have carbs,
life
within.
Is not worth.
Besides, I'm a grumpy asshole, first and foremost. But yeah. The headache I get is unreal.
Yeah, serotonin, your body needs glucose. Mm-hmm. Your brain. I mean, you throw protein and nothing but throw protein and fat into your body, it'll turn it into glucose. Or you have ketones for your brain. Your brain only runs off glucose or ketones. And it will prioritize that. Your brain will prioritize it and take it away from other tissues. Yeah. So like it all kind of feeds into the conversation. So winding the body down and winding the mind down and reducing those chemicals, you're activating the parasympathetic response. The opposite to fight or flight, rest and digest. That's a parasympathetic system. Okay, so we have to learn how to switch between these two systems effectively. And we're not doing that. The activities were the signals, the activity, the nervous system, the body has been bombarded with mixed signals. And then what happens? You can't sleep. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. So if we gain control over the inputs, over the habits, over the learning how to balance the nervous system. And one of the key things that balances that is perception. Mm. Like the definition of resilience. The definition of resilience is, do I have the capacity to deal with the thing that's stressing me out? That's what resilience is. That's exactly what resilience is. If I do think, yeah, I can handle this, I can do this, I'm resilient, right? If I don't feel as though I have it, the capacity or the ability to deal with the thing that's stressing me out.
So you're saying the perception is...
Perception. It's a filter. Okay. That we have. It's a filter that we have to interpret what's going on. Because, you know, why is it that one person can do something or handle something another person can't? You can train that. Here's the key thing. You can train your ability to calm down. Why is it that every military in the world and special forces in the world do this? Why is it that every elite athlete and military take sleep away from people, exercise them to the point of exhaustion, stress response, throw them into cold water, stress response, and scream and shout at them, stress response.
Yeah.
They're eliciting the stress response in the brain. And when you elicit the stress response in the brain, 30 to 80% of cognitive function goes away. Your brain flips into amygdala reactive emotional mode. That's what happens. So in the military, if you flip into that mode and you're out in the field and you've got 30 men with you, you're going to die. So they have to train their systems to be calm and be able to use the higher brain function to figure things out.
What exercises do they use?
Those are the four. They put them into extremely controlled, stressful environments.
I see.
They throw, water is a huge thing. It's cold water. So we can talk about ice baths.
Yeah.
So when you go into an ice bath, you get, like the stress response, whether it be psychological or physical, is the same.
Mm.
It's the same.
Okay.
The difference is between a cold water ice bath and you having an argument with your loved one, a big shouting match, right? The difference is cortisol. Cortisol isn't present in the cold water response. That's great, right? So when you're thrown into cold water, there's many benefits, but watch what happens to your mind. Your mind goes, oh my God, get me out of here. Yeah. I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. You're going to die, right? And what you have to do, what most people do is they use the breath, which is a very effective tool to calm that down, and they try and be peaceful. A better exercise is to give yourself a cognitive task while in that condition, while your body is going through stress response. If you give yourself a cognitive task to do, what you're doing is you are training your cognitive function to be higher under stress.
I try to do gratitude lists in my head while having a cold shower, actually.
Yeah.
Like I try to train myself for that.
Yeah.
I thought I was just doing a two-in-one kind of thing. Never heard of this cognitive.
Yeah. Okay. That's really good. I mean, it's something that, like, I worked with, you know, footballers, worked with fighters, I work with all kinds of people. And years ago, I said this to this, not knowing the science, I said to this guy, I said, what I want to do with them is put them into an ice bath and then start asking them tons of questions. And he kind of looked at me like I was mad. And I, some part of me knew that this was really useful. And I later found out mechanistically what was going on. I was like, I was right.
And what type of questions were you asking?
Something to challenge them, something to make them think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that would train, because you can train your brain to be calm in that moment. You are building neural connections. You are strengthening neural connections. Mm. When you challenge someone in that position, you're forcing them to not listen to the emotion and not listen to the signals of the body. And you're forcing them to think.
Yeah.
And you're forcing them to use higher brain function. And that is super valuable, because in the workplace, in life, in anything else, if you can maintain calm and your thinking mind in a critical situation, mm-hmm. you have a huge advantage.
It's like that constant exposure to discomfort mm-hmm. is what is going to lead to
that's where growth happens.
Yeah.
Like David Goggins, I'm a huge fan of David Goggins, right? He's actually coming to Ireland, so on the
17th. I know. Are you going there?
Yeah, I'm going there. My girlfriend.
You paid the feckin' ticket. Jesus
my girlfriend
Christ.
Got it for me for Christmas.
Of course, fair enough. Yeah. The moment I got that ad, I was like, I'm not paying 100 of it.
No, I got the meet and greet. She got me the meet and greet, so I'm like thrilled to bits.
Lucky
boss. Yeah. So like Goggins is right. Growth is not going to happen sitting on the couch.
No, it's not. Media. It's so strange though. And I'm I listen to all these guys, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's so good what they're after and all that. Mm. And it's about applying it in certain ways that will benefit you. Mm. And I'm not even arguing with you. I do agree with you. Just make sure it's just my tone right now. But sometimes I feel like their message gets lost.
Yeah.
And it just becomes not even stoic, but sometimes people apply it in the wrong setting where they're pushing people away then, for instance.
Yeah.
Or they're David Goggins, amazing dude. His knees are a completely different story. He ran himself down to the ground.
Yeah.
That's not healthy to a certain extent, but he has a different path to prove.
Yeah.
Versus me that wants to run a marathon. If I don't have any cartilage in my knees, in fairness, they are shit. But it's a different story. So I think it's just about how do you calm down that overwhelm of all this data that we're being fed through this?
Yeah. Yeah.
And do it practically, because everyone knows it. Everyone knows the good shit about the ice baths. Everyone knows the good stuff about turning that light box on.
Yeah.
It's the doing it.
Well, I agree. I couldn't agree more with you. And this is what I've come to realize.
Exactly.
Is that you ask anyone, any doctor, any professional, you ask anyone on the street, what should you do? Well, I should eat better food. Mm. I should exercise more. I should look after my sleep. I should do this. Everyone knows that.
It's bad for them.
Exactly.
Okay.
But here's where I come in.
Yes.
I like to come in. Here, I do the how.
Mm.
I do the how. I do all the science and I condense it into, human beings want to do the least amount effort, they will avoid at all costs. So how do we translate that? And I love Goggins' message, right? He is absolutely, I think, amazing. He had his journey. Everyone has their journey. Now, here's the thing, they do categorize Goggins is, he's just crazy. He's just, and he hates, I know he hates that himself. He said it, I'm not, So what we have to do then is we have to build a bridge. So I worked in nutrition. There's no point putting someone on a vegan diet if they're having four takeaways a night and drinking. So what do you do? You what's the next thing? What's the next step for you? Uh-huh. And you, I've heard Jordan Peterson talk about this as well, where, okay, if you're failing at that, lower the bar. If you're failing at that, lower the bar. People tell me, no time for exercise. And I say, well, give me your phone and let me see how long you've been on social media. It's okay. Mm. You can't do half an hour a day. You can do 10 minutes a day. If you can't do 10 minutes a day, you do 5 minutes a day. As a health scientist, your body and brain listen to every single thing you do. You might not, but it does. So that glass of water there is having a real biological, physiological effect on my body. It will impact my sleep, my ability to metabolize energy and food, my brain's hydration. Every single detail is recorded. That's what your body is. Okay, so do not underestimate these things. Do not underestimate going for a 10-minute walk and the impact that will have. So if you're failing at any of this stuff, you build a bridge. And what that does is makes you feel better, and it gives you encouragement then to take the next step.
Yeah, I think that's where we lack is, if I'm going to do something, I better be really fucking good at it.
Yeah.
And then because you're not, you then decide not to do it at all. Where it's like, I'd like to exercise more. Mm. I'm going to exercise 5 times a week for 1.5 hours.
Correct.
And the moment that I don't do that, I'm back to not exercising at all.
Yeah.
When in reality, what you're saying is, dumb it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Just so that you can achieve it and then go on to achieve more.
Yeah.
Once that becomes a thing.
Once you've laid down the foundation in the brain, and then that is it's no longer a grind. It's part of your daily thing. It doesn't take up any of the mental space in your head. Wow. Okay. So once you've ingrained the habit, you will get the benefit, and then it won't take up the real estate in your effort level. The friction level will go down to zero virtually. The friction is change. Change is what we have issue with. And that's the hypothalamus. That's the adapting. That's the, oh, don't like that. That's the discomfort, the change. Mm-hmm. Look at COVID. I mean, huge change. Everyone, anxiety levels went through the roof. Then we got used to it. Then it was cool to work from home. And then it was like, hey, this is good. I like this. Yeah. Then change happened again. Go back to work. Oof, huge anxiety levels again. So it wasn't working from home, or it wasn't that. And this is what I try and tell people. The problem you think you have is not that. It's dealing with change, and it's implementing these small things. But once you do, you get the benefit, and you get encouragement then to do more, and you feel better. And then you go to the next level. Like when you train, you're not going to go, I want to do a marathon, and go, I'm going to do a marathon and show up at the start line and do it. You're going to train, and you're going to build those actions, those daily actions, into a system of weekly training. And that's going to be a program over months. Mm-hmm. And then that's physical resilience. You do the same mentally. Mm-hmm. And you know, exercise is a vehicle for mental resilience. So that's the system you must develop. And failure, let me tell you, I love failure. I have failed more than most people, right? I could tell you all the big companies I've worked for and all the sports stars and all, that's my success. But I could spend an hour telling you about my failures. Right? I set up in Mayo, where I'm from. I done a talk in my hometown years ago, and I advertised in the local newspaper. I told everyone I'm doing this talk, told all my friends, come to my talk. And the evening came, and I was wired and excited, and I went to the center, and the guy said, how many chairs would I put out? And I said, put out 50 chairs. So he put out 50 chairs, and there I stood waiting for the crowds to come. And how many people came? Two. Two people came 10 minutes late. And I thought I put the wrong time in the poster, you know? Ugh. And that was like a kick in the stomach to me. But
what was that like? What, like?
I mean, you feel vulnerable. Mm. Here's what I learned about vulnerability, right? When you're at your most vulnerable, you're at your most powerful.
Shit. Why is that?
Because there's no more bullshit. It's clear. Everything is clear. You know the path forward now.
Okay.
So as I stood there in the center, I thought, this is not working for my business, for myself. What I am now doing is not working. It felt awful. I felt vulnerable. I felt whatever. But I thought, right, I need to change. So vulnerability is something that can be very powerful in your life, because all the bullshit is gone and the pathway then becomes clear. You generally know exactly what you have to do when you're very vulnerable.
And sometimes it's not what you did then.
Yes, exactly. So I changed. Okay. No, 3 years later, there was a full page in the Irish Independent about me working with Conor McGregor. I was working with all the, you know. So failure was part of, you know, my success. Now, the other fascinating link between sleep and failure is this. During night stage sleep, your brain rewires. Neuroplasticity, learning. That's what learning is. When you learn anything, it must be wired into the brain first. Learning doesn't happen when you're trying to memorize. Learning happens at night when you're sleeping, right? So neuroplasticity. The trigger mechanism necessary for neuroplasticity is repeated failure. Not failing once. You must actually fail several times before your brain goes, oh, I know what he wants me to do. Let's learn that.
Mm.
So, you know, you're going to encounter failure. Absolutely. So it's part of it. So people are going to try and fail and try again. And that's, you know, that's part of your journey. So expect failure.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a part of life, and it just indicates. I like to use, Dara Fleming told me this, he's an author. I can't steal from him, but he says using things or feelings as a compass. So using failure as a compass. Mm-hmm. And then knowing where to go forward.
It's like vulnerability.
Vulnerability, whatever it may be, using vulnerability as a compass.
Yeah.
Discomfort as a compass. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is the direction that I have to go now.
Yeah.
And the moment that he mentioned that, I was like, I'm taking that for whatever it may be. Like, all these feelings that threaten me to a certain extent, that intimidate me.
Yes.
I'm going to start using as a compass to keep moving forward, whether it is reaching out to people that I think are out of my league, or whether it is being more, speaking more on this, that is something like uncomfortable, because usually I ask and I shut up, which is an interesting, like, it's a skill that I want to keep on the podcast, but me actually chatting away is not something comfortable. I wasn't born to do this, I feel. But anyways, so we're talking about all of that. Now, I feel like we went over the habits, but when it comes to not just quality of sleep, but you started off this chat talking about the racing mind. Now, a lot of people, they can't just turn off that racing mind. They can't turn off the pressure that their boss is like stressing out. They're stressing themselves out. Fair enough, it's a choice. You can actually decide to quit and maybe change job, whatever it may be. What advice do you usually give these people?
So you need to have a strategy for short, medium, and long-term stress in your life. Stress is crucial.
What is? I never thought of that. What is the different terms of stress and stuff?
So there are different types of stress, but like, stress is essentially your body's transition into sympathetic, right? So like a short-term stressor, we all know of an argument, of something going on, suddenly it could be completely unexpected, you know, someone cuts me off in the road, I'm like, and they start giving me, you know, I'm like, hey, so like, you know, you can have a short-term stressor like that. So like, your tool to deal with that is the physiological side that Andrew Huberman talks about, is the double inhale and then slow exhale, double inhale, slow exhale, double inhale, slow exhale, cycle of breathing like that. That's the fastest scientific way to reduce stress.
Yes.
It's not based in psychology, because when has calm down ever worked? Or telling your partner to calm down. It's the fastest way to drive them up the other way,
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's certainly one tool that's very useful. Okay, short-term, medium-term stress then. That's your ice baths with the cognitive exercise.
Okay.
That's your medium term to deal with that. And that's the kind of stuff that could be kind of financial pressure, or could be stuff that's going on.
Mm.
You know, it's recognizing and then knowing kind of what to do with that. And, you know, you might have to train the underlying things like your mind and your, you know, what learn what triggers you as well. The long term stress then is really about planning and thinking, okay, well, what do I not like about my life and my job?
Yeah.
And you see, much of the stuff that goes on at night when people are mulling through that stuff, it's kind of like bringing up short-term stress for a long-term stress problem, where they're going, if I leave now, I'm not going to be on that money. If I say this to her, she's going to say that, then this is going to happen. We're never in charge of outcome. We're only responsible for taking the action.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to take the action.
Mm.
Because we're thinking about, if I do that and say this, now, let me tell you something, it rarely happens. It rarely goes the way you think it will. But it takes courage. Like, I hesitate when I say that. It takes courage to take the action. Because the thing about courage is, you get the courage when you do the thing that makes you afraid. You get it after. It's not fair, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Every time.
So, but you need to start to think about that. You need to start to think about, what are my strategies for dealing with stress? And you know, I go back again to the three of the body, the nervous system, and the mind.
Mm.
And all three need to be trained and have inputs. And that comes, all those inputs are what we talked about, the habits, the daily things, and everything else. And it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Mm.
So that's the failure piece. There's going to be ups and downs, but if you come up with some kind of plan, that's the thing. You know, your goals will determine the systems that are going to take you there on a daily basis. And I always say to people, don't get overwhelmed. Bring it back to the day. If you get overwhelmed, keep it in the day. Like, you cannot do something that's 3 weeks ahead. You cannot do, you know, you bring it back to, okay, what can I do today? And if you can knock some of those off the list, good. You've made progress. Progress rather than perfection. So that's what it's about for me. It's kind of, it's bringing it back to the day, but doing it. Because then we get caught up on the couch and go, oh, I've done well. I'm going to sit here now for 3 hours and I'm going to whatever. And we let it slide. Right. And then, you know, we repeat that behaviors and whatever. We don't tend to change. Because here's, I'll give you a story. There was a man who went for a walk and he was walking past this house and he looked in the window and he seen a lovely dog sitting in front of the fire. And the dog was kind of, every now and again, he'd kind of move and bark. And he thought, something wrong with that dog. And there was a little old lady sitting there. The second day he was walking, I thought, I'll check on that dog. Looked in again, the dog was kind of sitting in the same spot, but he was kind of, he'd kind of move and he'd yelp and he thought, something wrong with that dog. Okay, tomorrow, if I see the same thing, I'm going to tell the lady. So the third day he comes, looks in the window, dog is still there, yelps and barks, whatever. So he knocks on the door. He said, look, I just want to tell you, there's something wrong with your dog, I think. He seems to be okay. And then he kind of yelps. She goes, oh yeah, that dog loves the heat of the fire, but there's a nail coming up in the floor that's digging into him. So every time he moves, the nail is digging into him, but he doesn't want to move away from the heat of the fire. And that's us. That's us. You know, we don't want to do the thing. We have a certain amount of comfort and security and safety. It's like you said about the emotions, right?
Mm.
We revert to those. We revert to those emotions and behaviors as default when things go pear-shaped or when we have stress. We go back to eating crap food, not exercising, going to bed, seeking comfort, whatever else. And like, I love what you said as well. And I learned that those should not be pushed away.
Mm.
Those feelings of fear, of rejection, of whatever.
You have to sit with them. You have to welcome them to the table. Yeah.
Welcome them. And that's the way they lose their power. Like trauma.
Yes, literally.
Trauma is passed on through what is not said.
Mm.
Push it down. And in Ireland, we're really good at that. Really good at that, right?
Exactly.
But it's only when we engage with it and allow it to come in and open it out and then we can kind of deal with it. So I think there's a lot. We're really gone philosophical now.
It's a life lesson. Fuck sleep.
Yeah. But I kind of say fix your sleep, fix your life. But actually, it's kind of the other way around.
Yeah.
Fix your life, fix your sleep, fix all the other things. Sleep is fine. Like, your sleep is generally okay. Like, there are people who have sleep disorders, and that's a different medical category.
Yes.
And there are shift workers who will struggle because they have circadian misalignment. But for most of the population that come to me with sleep issues, they have lifestyle choice issues and they have boundary issues.
It's as if I started out this chat talking to you, like, with my Garmin, like, results, and you literally just gave me a mirror and went... Fuck you, bitch. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I completely get it. So one question that I have for you though.
Yeah.
So I'm in my mid 20s. I'm sure there's a lot of people that listen to this that are in like their mid 20s.
Mm.
Burnout is a massive thing with our generation.
Yeah.
Besides these habits that you said.
Okay.
How do you deal with burnout?
Okay. So let's look at it.
Okay.
Burnout. I mentioned earlier, there's a part of your brain, the hypothalamus, that deals with the environment and how we interact with it. And, right, okay. That's the area of your brain that burnout happens.
Oh.
That's the area because what happens is this. The systems all meet there. So the timing mechanism for your sleep and your circadian rhythm is located in the hypothalamus. The HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary axis, which secretes the hormones to tell you to get into action or to relax, that sits there. And the central nervous system, the key, you know, the main junction sits there. So all of those sit there. And what happens to people is they get stress, those react. And if you continually expose yourself to chronic stress, that area of the brain becomes hypersensitized. And then the smallest thing is enough to spark the stress response. People burn out. There's no such thing as adrenal burnout, right?
Mm.
No such thing. We have enough adrenaline in our system to keep us 200 years. Right. So that's a fallacy to say that we have an adrenal burnout. But that area of the brain is what becomes hypersensitized and then we just cannot deal with anything. That is burnout. Again, like I explained, that is burnout from a physiological level. And that's what and it affects our mental health, affects every area of everything. How do you pull someone back from burnout?
Mm.
So the research tells us that things like sleep and food, yeah, they'll help, but they won't pull someone back out of burnout. How do we pull someone out of burnout? Play and social connection. Isn't that lovely? I think that's just incredible. That the way to pull someone back from that and get someone out of it is to do something that makes them light up. Play. We've forgotten how to play. We've run the phones distracting ourselves. But interacting with humans, social connection is one of the only things that will pull someone out of burnout. When we're depressed, when we feel lonely, when we isolate, working from home, all that, we get an increase in a chemical called tachykinin in the brain. All species get this, all species that are meant to be social. So we're meant to be social in groups, right? And that causes fear, paranoia, anxiety, and it reduces serotonin and dopamine. So that connection with humans is so important, our relationship. And like you mentioned the Mediterranean diet earlier on. Like a researcher from Harvard went to Sicily to find out why are so many people living to 100. And yeah. Susan Pinker, she made a list of the top 10 things that will get you to 100. Number one and number two were social connection and close relationships. They were more powerful indicators than smoking, drinking, nutrition, sleep, everything. 100%. So how, like this, anyone who experiences burnout who feels close to it, I'd say in some of my literature, I bring people from the edge of burnout to peak performance. And the way we do it is step by step is looking at all these different areas, and we start slowly turning the dials, moving their behaviors, moving their attitudes, moving their mindsets. Because I said to you earlier, I'm not a sleep coach. I'm like, I end up being every other type of coach, but that's how we do it. If they're at burnout, it's a different thing. Mm-hmm. And I work with, I speak with other health professionals. I spoke to a lady who does a lot of work with Google in the US, and she told me, Tom, all the corporates are coming saying they're burnt out already. There's these people and they're a shell of what they were, and they're not able to perform, and they're having all these mental health issues. They're burnt out. So the way you pull people back from that is get them connected with other people and get them to play. And that's, again, scientific literature that tells us.
Weirdly enough, a massive topic on this podcast is how to make friends in your 20s and loneliness as a young adult, because I do think that a lot of us go into college and then straight out of college and we're like, shit, like I'm in a new city.
Yeah.
My colleagues are all older than me. How do I make friends again?
Yeah.
And it's sometimes really is as simple as pinpoint your hobby.
Yeah.
And then figure out a way to do it around people.
Yes.
So if that is, rather than painting and following a YouTube video,
yeah,
go join a painting class, go join a sports team instead of maybe a gym at first.
Yeah.
If that's what you want.
Yeah.
Because it really is that. It's fucking play.
Yeah.
Like something to get your mind off of things.
You're not, you're not thinking about,
yeah,
you know, you're full of energy. You have the, like anything that involves play will give you adrenaline, noradrenaline to the brain. It will light you up and you'll be like,
something to look excited, forward to.
Something to look forward to. And there is other research on social connection, like the famous nun study, which all these nuns gave their bodies to science, and they found that in this group of nuns, all of them had plaque in the brain associated with Alzheimer's disease, but none of them had developed Alzheimer's, not one. Why? Because they were living in a tight-knit community and they were teaching. They were engaged.
Yeah, with community.
So purpose and play is huge for us. Like, 100%. You know, social, we're on the social networks. We're not connecting with people.
Yeah, yeah. It's about getting this conversation to a public space. It's about giving back and connecting with humans at the end of the day. That's like the cool thing. And that's why the likes of David Goggins, what's going to be more interesting, all the podcasts he does, in fairness, he only did two. Or is it going to be that live chat he's going to have?
Yeah.
That's going to be the one that has the greatest impact on people, I would hope, anyways. Yeah. I don't know. There's something so lovely about that sort of stuff. I think we fucking covered it all.
Okay.
Unless we keep repeating the same thing. If you were to give someone just like one easy piece of advice, they don't want to change up their life, give them one thing. What's it going to be, Tom?
It's a toss-up between, I would say push yourself physically. It was either between that or the social connection. That might be hard because some people are just, you know, socially awkward. They might not do it. Test yourself, like go out there and use your body for what it was designed to do. And that could be a 20K walk or it could be cold or it could be something else. Get out there and see what that feels like. Not when you're doing it, because let me tell you something, it's going to feel shit. Well, I go for a run and my head is going, oh my God, stop this. You're going to die. You probably have a heart attack. I think I can feel pain. And I go through the whole lot, right? And I said, no, after you will feel a sense of accomplishment after. You will feel good about your... This is an inside job, all of this stuff. So find something that lights you up, but take action on it. Take action. Don't try and think... You kind of think your way out of the problem. You never can. Action is required. So take action on something in your life.
Thank you so much. This went from a sleep lesson to a life lesson. And it couldn't have gone any more perfect, man.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Dom. And thank you everyone for listening. I really appreciate it. Push yourself. Dismissing the hard work, they calling it talent. And I find that disrespectful because I put on the mileage up for the but I'm down for the challenge.